Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophy, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Welcome to Pagan Warrior Radio. Supporting the warriors who serve, honoring the warrior within. Join David and Jeanette Ewing and Pam Kelly on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Central for talk, news, ideas, music, and ceremonial encounters. Create community with military pagans across the USA and around the world. Tune in, call in, join live chat on the Pagans Tonight Network. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Download free podcasts to listen and share. Pagan Warrior Radio is sponsored by Circle Sanctuary, providing education, rituals, publications, festivals, and more for pagans worldwide. Find us on the web at www.circlesanctuary.org.
Good evening and welcome to Circle Sanctuary's Pagan Warrior Radio on the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. I'm Pamela Kelly, and I have David, Jeanette, sons Jeanette right now. She'll be joining us shortly. But, David, I have to apologize for giving you a near heart attack earlier today because I called up and I'm like, do you have the names for the list for the Pagan Military Service Ribbon? And you're like, that's not tonight. I'm sorry. But it's good to mention, though, that's next week. So if you are listening and you haven't gotten your Pagan Military Service Ribbon or you know somebody that deserves one and you'd like to give them the heads up about it, next week we have another award ceremony. And you go to circlesanctuary.org to get information and get your name in or your whoever's name in to be part of the ceremony next week.
That's right.
Correct.
Yeah, just get to go to the Circle website, click on Our Work, and then there's a Military Ministries link there. You click on that, and you see all the different stuff that Circle does for the military support, including the Pagan Military Service Ribbon, and you can click on that and get to the form to fill out with the information and that kind of stuff. And it's kind of a note, too, that, you know, Circle does ask for a name and, you know, information for various things, you know, mailing lists and email lists and stuff, and it is, you know, just want to remind everybody, too, that the information that Circle gathers, that kind of contact stuff, is kept private, is not sold or given to anybody outside of Circle for non-Circle reasons. So, you know, there's a lot of attention paid to protecting that information. So, you know, I think some folks have had some concerns in the past about giving, you know, given names and stuff for things. But we keep that pretty quiet, you know, and try
and
to protect that.
Sorry to interrupt you, mm-hmm. but it just got me to, reminded me that since we're going to celebrate the equinox and the balance of the year, that we're leaning towards more the dark half of the year, which is when you and Jeanette, hi Jeanette, will start doing the Operation Circle Care more in high gear, and that information also for the people to get the packages for that, same thing applies, correct? With the
True.
Information, you don't share it.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, we that's right. We gather that and you know, use that for the shipping information and stuff, and we keep that. I mean, we provide it to the Circle office. Obviously, it's provided to the Circle office, so they have a master record of the activity. But it is not given or sold to anybody for anything. And we've had people ask us in the past, like, can you share your shipping list so that we can mail stuff to them too? Like, you know, we really want to be sensitive to everybody's privacy, and, you know, that is, there's some personal information, you know, address information, that kind of stuff that people may not be comfortable with getting out into the ether. So we keep that, you know, we do keep that confidential. you know, so
we
folks
can't
who do have
really share the information, but you can share the what mm-hmm. what can we share with outside organizations that want to help out? They can send the they can send stuff to you.
Oh, right? Sure, and we'll if there's a group or a coven or a circle or somebody who has stuff that they want to send, you know, we'll be more than happy to include whatever they send us to send, and including, you know, names of, you know, group name and that kind of stuff, you know. So if you've got if you're part of a group and you want to send something out and say, you know, this is from, you know, the coven of such and such or the circle such and such, and you want to put a little tag on the stuff, that's fine. We'll include that in there so that people know, you know, where things are coming from and stuff, and they can contact your group or whatever if they're in the area or are able. So we won't, you know, we'll share that. So we just want to, but we'll collect everything and put it in the boxes and send it. But it will definitely include any kind of information about where it came from and stuff too, if you want to add that to what you're donating. Yeah.
Awesome. That's right. And you know, a number of groups and circles and covens in the past have, in fact, sent things along that also have, you know, a little card of their group, or somebody has made something that does have a label on it, you know, lovingly made from the coven of whatever or the circle of whatever, and you know, we keep that on there because a lot of times it becomes a good way for when people come home, if they want a group to try to connect with, you know, it's a good starting place, you know, or a particular area or region of the country.
Yes, indeed. So just had to put a plug in for Operation Circle Care, because with the many things that Circle Sanctuary does, that's one of the things that we do specifically for the military. And I say we, it's you guys are the backbone. You guys do the sweating and the working for that. That's David and Jeanette that put it together.
Yeah,
right.
We co-pilot, and what I start doing, actually, probably starting next month, is, you know, go back through everything and start separating things in different boxes and piles. And what we do is we just start assembly lining things. And, you know, I like to try to take a look at everything to make sure as much as possible that, you know, if a group or circle or coven starts sending things in, you know, earlier is always better for us. You know, sometime, anytime after really October 1st, it's fine by me, because then I can start having things separated out to try to make sure that everyone gets as many of whatever item as possible. Like the pentacle, you know, necklaces and pendants, crystals and stones, a lot of things like that, little handmade things and gewgaws and trinkets and, you know, little charm bags or whatever. People can be really creative, and people have made some really cool stuff in the past. You know, an individual small group of folks will get together and make, you know, 20, 30 or 30 or of whatever. And, you know, so people end up with some really nice boxes of goodies, you know. And that's just the magical stuff. And then we have books that we send, magazines, things like crossword puzzle books are awesome. Mm-hmm. Sudoku. you know.
Well, so I have a question for you about the Operation Circle Care. I know it's for military members and their families, but goes back to a conversation that David and I had a little bit earlier, Jeanette, with the amount of civilians and especially contractors who are helping out with the military missions mm-hmm. these days. If there is we have Reverend Terry Power who's a broadcast here, you know, does the pre-show on Tuesdays following Selena's show. I know he does a lot of contract work with the military. For somebody like him, contractors and civilians, would they be included as well with the Operation Circle Care? Sorry to put you on the spot with this. I know we didn't talk about this prior.
That's
yeah, I'm trying
question.
To think. Of, haven't we sent
and,
to? Have we sent to somebody who, a civilian who was? I think we did send a package to a civilian contractor who was actually stationed overseas, because we do have. you know, I know we've got people in Afghanistan, we've had people, civilians at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, because, you know, the company I work for is a government contracting company. We have people who've been there, you know, who are there. Who work there, you know, full time.
Yeah. I have a good friend that's been in Afghanistan.
Haven't we sent to contractors?
We may have from time to time. And I know one thing that we have done is we will create a family box. If, let's say, the family is taken, but, you know, the service member, man or woman, is the one who's stationed, well, we don't just send something just for the one person. We send it to, and I can recall, it was either Germany.
Germany. Yeah.
And we ended up sending them like two boxes of stuff, because then I start thinking about, you know, just other things. And well, if they're in a barracks or in a house or something, hey, guess what? They can burn in their own incense and they can burn candles. I think I sent them a load, a giant bunch of, you know, candles and incense that the dude stationed on the ship or the woman stationed on the ship or, you know, in a barracks somewhere overseas, guess what? They cannot burn that. So we try to give them everything but that, you know, other kinds of things, ritual oil instead of that, or the flameless candle. The battery powered thing to try to make up for that, because then they can actually have a source of flame, even if it's only, you know, electronics. But yeah, those kind of scenarios.
Yeah.
We've done past shows, and maybe we can do one again in the future, because it's always good to bring up. Maybe there's new things that we thought of how to do ritual in your dorm room or on board a ship, things like that. Mm-hmm.
And for people who are interested in donating, you know, coming up with interesting and creative ideas to make things, small things that can be meaningful for somebody who does not have access to the, you know, they're not outdoors. You know, if you're stationed aboard a ship and it's on deployment at Christmas time, you can't, your access to the outdoors is probably limited to, like, going to the fantail of the ship or something. David and Cheryl put the stories about
right.
that. So, yeah, you know, you, so coming up with good, meaningful ritual substitutions and elemental substitutions for things other than, you know, the obvious way of being outside to connect with nature can become a really important thing.
The reason we were talking about contractors, I want to get to in a little bit, but before we get into the ritual, there's some serious stuff that David wanted to talk about, some serious stuff that's going on, lending good energy to. If you want to go ahead, David.
Sure. Right. So this week has been, you know, there's been a lot of tragedy here this week. There was this past Monday, there was somebody who was a government contractor who worked on base, worked at the facility, entered the Naval Sea Systems Command building at the Navy, at the Washington Navy Yard. And, you know, by the time the day was done, he had killed 12 of the people who work in the building. And they were all civilian contractors. And it also killed a police officer, Washington, a D.C. Metro police officer. And eventually he was killed by the police during the activities, you know, the actions taken there. We, Jeanette and I live here in Manassas Park, Virginia, in Northern Virginia. So we're, you know, in the area of the D.C., we're in the D.C. metro area. So obviously our news on Monday was very full of what was going on at the Navy Yard. And one of our concerns was, you know, that the fact that I work for a government contracting company and we have people who work out of a building that's across the street from the base. We have people who work on the base with, you know, for my company. So we had to do a check-in, and everybody that I, you know, all of my folks, the folks who work in my company are fine. they've all been accounted for and everything. They're fine. But that was a little bit of a stress, you know, this past Monday. We were dealing with that kind of an immediate in our area here. And, you know, Jeanette had been in the Navy, and when she was in the Navy, she was stationed at the Navy Yard, and that's where we met. I mean, so this the Navy Yard for us is an important thing because that's where we met and stuff. So, you know, it's kind of a close thing for us, and it has been for a lot of people around the country. This you know, it wasn't just a few years ago. There was a shooting at Fort Hood, Texas, and back in 2009. So, you know, we want to make sure that we mention the workers who were killed at the Navy Yard this past week. And, you know, they are, even though they were not uniformed members of the armed forces, they're certainly, you know, in a warrior category. They're doing work that is ensuring that the Navy is able to do its job and fulfill its mission, as is the case with a lot of, you know, the contractors who work for the Department of Defense. You know, they may not be in the front line in the combat roles, but they're certainly making sure that our armed forces are able to do what they need to do and fulfill their missions.
That's very true. And as I was listening to the news yesterday, because it is all over, there's a local news radio station, WTOP, that starts, you know, talking about the names of those who were killed. And I remember one of them was a guy who was a retired commander, and he continued to work for the Navy after he retired. And he was one of the people responsible for designing one of the new classes of assault ships. And I'm sitting there thinking about this. I'm thinking, you know, the guy served in the Navy, and when he retired, he continued to work for the Navy, and he had this critical role. And there are a lot of people who never even served, like this guy, who never even served, who just spend their whole life as civilian contractors working for the Department of Defense, who end up doing some pretty critical things. And a lot of times, you know, and we want to obviously support our troops and things like that, but, you know, sometimes these folks, they kind of get left out of the mix a little bit. They're like, you know, they do their job and they do their thing, and sometimes they're left out of the loop of remembering. And it is sort of a really important thing. And, you know, everybody who got killed the other day were civilians. There were no active duty military. So these people had done their jobs. They didn't serve, but, you know, the last thing that their family members probably ever worried about was than being killed in a manner of it, you know, in a manner.
Well, and it just goes to show how important. I mean, I don't know if you guys have the. We had to take one, and I've been a contractor and a civilian DOD employee. And we have to take all those. One of the things that you mentioned, David, we had to do the check-in thing. And were you wondering, why the heck do we have to fill out all this information and tell the base how to contact us? This is why. You know, in a situation like this, and, you know, you also wanted to bring up the disasters happening in Colorado. Situations like natural disasters and you know, when you have horrific situations like what happened at the shipyard, the base still needs to get a hold of you to make sure that, that you're okay. And that's when you realize that, you know, this isn't just a civilian job. Like I did IT. It's not like working for a civilian hospital. You know, it's like you have a part of the mission. You are part of the mission. And with the military getting less and less, getting more and more, I wouldn't say privatized, but getting more and more of a civilian workforce doing the support roles in the military, it's very important to recognize the role that civilians are doing as part of the team, the whole team. And not to lessen, you know, not that we're going to lessen the loss of lives, but not to lessen the roles that these people had as warriors, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True. Oh, and I misspoke. The police officer Officer Scott Williams was shot multiple times in the legs, but he did survive.
Okay.
I think there's still, you know, a question as to how well he's going to recover. And apparently from the chief of police, Kathy Lanier, the D.C. chief of police, has reported that she's pretty sure that he will walk again. So I think that was at one point that was a question, you know, based on the injuries. He was, you know, being shot multiple times in the legs. You know, so a D.C. police officer was seriously injured in the shooting. Yeah,
you know,
along
really
with others. There were others too, yeah. Go ahead.
What really struck me watching this is the amount of female people that were leading, you know, the FBI investigation, the chief of police, the spokesperson for D.C., you know, there are a lot of very strong females, and I thought,
mm-hmm.
wow, this is really cool. I just was
yes.
very proud.
We do have
yep.
women warriors, too.
Yes. Yes.
True.
It was nice to see them in the positions that they were, and you know, the just being in a leadership role. Sorry that I got to see them in such a in such a bad situation, but anyhow, yes,
mm-hmm.
a minute to recognize those there and comfort the loved ones left behind. And I know one of the things I brought up to David earlier, Jeanette, is it really is showing the investigation and how the media is handling what happened. It's showing the big disconnect between people who are outside of the military world, how much they don't understand about how things work in the military. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been kind of on certain things in San Francisco. You know, but I do think, though, that we, in spite of everything that happened, people do have something to be thankful for, and that, you know, quick response, and that more lives weren't lost. I'm grateful for that, definitely.
Yes. And hopefully this will help with my big crusade. I know that people are trying to demonize this young man, and, you know, what he did was horrific. But I hope it shows more the need for mental health reform, mental health, you know, attention to mental health than anything else. I mean, you know, there you go. I mean, I don't want to get into a great big debate about it. That's just where I would like energy to go, is that it brings more people to realize that we lack in our society good mental health support to you know, to stop something like this, if it could have been stopped, or to
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think, you know, just blessings of healing energy and wisdom, understanding, and, you know, more of a need for just peace and peaceful intentions in our society.
We have somebody in the chat room who is asking if they're a solitary practitioner, how would you do Maven ritual by yourself? So hold off on that we're going to answer that question because that's part of what the mission of the show is for. But
yeah,
and
actually,
that,
yeah. And tonight, our ritual is largely geared towards people who are practicing in a solitary manner. It just so happens that this one is tooled more towards that. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why we do these on the Pagan Warrior Radio. We do these rituals so that, I mean, they're all pretty well, you know, basically designed for somebody to do on their own. And one of the ideas is that, you know, we kind of gear it towards the folks who might be in a place or situation where they may not be able to actually perform a ritual. You might be able to just, you know, download the podcast, listen to it, close your eyes and envision and follow along, you know, because the visualization is very important in magical practice anyway. So, you know, by following along and doing it that way, because most of our rituals and stuff are our journeys. So we're nearing a halfway point here for our program tonight. So I do want to also mention the other folks out in Colorado, the flooding. The you know, they had a tremendous amount of rain out there and up in the mountains. And, you know, the city of Boulder has had almost their annual amount of rain this month so far, you know, just
wow.
This month. You know, they average about 20 inches of rain per year, and they're at like 17 or something for the
wow.
month, something like that. They had one day where they had over 9 inches of rain in one day, which more than doubled the previous daily rainfall record. It's been just unreal. And all that water, you know, fell in the mountains and came down these canyons into the rivers. There was a variety of rivers, the Kashlapota River and the and some others, and they flow into the South Platte River, which extends up in northeastern Colorado up into Nebraska, and that's where all this rain kind of made its way to. And it's been flooding in cities like Greeley, Fort Collins, Loveland, and Fort Morgan, you know, which is out along Interstate 76, has seen this flooding as the water surged out. A really nice town up in the mountains called Estes Park, which is one of my favorite towns just ever, had a lot of damage. And, you know, Lyons is another town up there just northwest of Boulder that my high school used to play. Well, that's the area I'm from. So our high school used to play Lyons. That was one of the schools that we played football and stuff against. So
yeah, I think they're looking for the guy that was their football coach for many, many years. I think he's one of the ones that is missing. They did a show story about him.
Could be, yeah. I mean, you know, there are hundreds of people still missing, and you know, the largest, the rescue operation, the helicopter rescue operations, they've rescued more people than they did after Katrina.
Wow.
You know, so it's been a pretty major thing.
Greeley, I don't think people understand. Like, you know, you're talking about Lyons and Boulder, and everyone knows Estes Park is up in the mountains, but Greeley's out on the plains, isn't it? I've been to Greeley.
Right, and for
before.
Yeah, Greeley and Kearney, Kersey and some of these other towns, Wiggins and Fort Morgan, and these are all out on the plains. These are on the flatlands. But the river, I mean, it goes out of the plains, and it just stretched out and it widened out, and it flooded a bunch of farmland.
It's like hours away from the mountains, right? Or I'm thinking
A little bit.
An hour.
A bit.
Or
I mean,
so.
It's work. Yeah, yeah, it is. You know, Fort Morgan is about an hour and a half away from Denver. Greeley is about the same distance, you know, up to more north. right, so these are out on the plains. And this water is making its way to Nebraska. There are flood warnings and stuff in Nebraska right now, and they're preparing for the high water out there because it's working.
Yeah, I lived off the Platte. When I lived in Nebraska, I lived in a town called Plattsmouth. It's the mouth of the Platte where the confluent is to the Missouri. So the Platte is a major river in that area and for just the history of our nation. You know, the Platte played a big role in it. So,
sure did. So we wanted to mention them and everything they're going through and make sure that we send some healing to the families and, you know, honor our those who were killed in the natural disaster and in the shooting. You know, this week, it's been a pretty rough week for a lot of folks. And anybody who likes to help, you can donate to the Navy League. That's NavyLeague.org. They've created a fund to help people who were affected by the shooting. And you can also at NavyLeague.org, and there's always the American Red Cross at RedCross.org, you know, who are doing a lot to provide shelter and help out the folks who are, you know, out in Colorado. And, I mean, they help veterans and do a lot of work anyway. They do a lot of veterans, you know, military support work anyway, so it's a good organization to donate to for that purpose. So we'll take a moment, and then we'll process into our ritual, yeah?
Yes. So I think just take a moment to center and ground.
So,
is Jeanette there now?
Huh?
Is Jeanette there now?
She is. Jeanette's
Hello.
Here, so we'll tag team this one tonight.
Everyone is ready. We're going to start. 'By casting a quick circle of energy building and community. As you visualize in the space that you're in, visualize yourself being encircled above and below and all around the circle of white or bright, warm light. And as you visualize that circle around you, let it expand around your immediate ritual space, wherever that may be, and then on beyond the space of your home or the place that you may be residing at that moment, wherever that may be. And as you sense that bubble of energy, of light and warmth expand around you, envision that light sending a tendril out and connecting with all the other lights of those who are listening to this ritual here in this time and place, and in a time and space beyond. The circle of energy and connection is cast. Blessed be.
Blessed be.
And we focus our attention and energies to the east. We welcome the powers of east and air. Elementals, spirits of air, home of the great eagle, protect this space and grant us the gift of wisdom. Spirits of air, we welcome you. And we turn to the direction of south. We welcome the powers of south and fire, elementals, spirits of fire, home of the Wile E. Coyote. Protect this space and grant us the gift of passion and creativity. Spirits of fire, we welcome you. And we turn our direction to the west. We welcome the powers of west and water. Elementals, spirits of water, home of the blue whale. Protect this space and grant us the gift of healing and compassion. Spirits of water, we welcome you. We next turn to face the north. We welcome the powers of the north and earth. Elementals, spirits of the earth, home of the timber wolf. Protect this space and give us the strength to carry on during the coming dark time of the year. Spirits of Earth, we welcome you.
And we look up and we call to the great Mother Goddess of many names. Be with us this day as we enter the beginning of the dark time of the year. Grant us the powers of introspection from your cauldron of wisdom. And protect us as we journey into the cold months of the year. Mother Goddess, we welcome you. Great God of the harvest of many names, be with us this day as we give thanks for the bounty which you have bestowed upon us. God of the waning sun, shine your light of inspiration upon us as we enter the dark time of the year. Harvest God, we welcome you. So tonight, we will be marking this night of balance between the light time and the dark time, this day of equal day and equal night on this equinox. And tonight, we're celebrating the autumnal equinox, and those of you in the southern hemisphere will be celebrating the spring equinox. We will take a journey to measure the balance in our lives, as this is the day of equals. How balanced are we in our lives? If you're able, close your eyes and take a deep breath. And feel the stress of the day, of the week, exit your body as you exhale. Your mind, see the number one, and then in your mind's eye, see the number two. And in your mind's eye, see the number three. The three. And in your mind's eye, see the number four. The four. And in your mind's eye, see the number five. The five. And as the numbers increase, you feel yourself relax. In your mind's eye, see the number six, Now, in your mind's eye, see the number 7. 7. And in your mind's eye, see the number 8. The 8. And in your mind's eye, see the number 9. The 9. And in your mind's eye, see the number 10, the 10. And in your mind's eye, see the number 11, 11. And finally, in your mind's eye, see the number 12s. The 12s. As the numbers fade, you see appearing through the darkness a doorway. The doorway may be in the side of a wall, in the side of a hill, in a mountain, or it may just be in the darkness, a doorway. Open the door and enter. As you pass through the door, you see a room which is divided in half. The right side of the room is bright and well lit. The left side of the room is dark and shadows. The room is divided much like a half moon. On the floor, you see a diagram of an 8-spoked wheel. And the light of the dark light division shows 4 spokes on the light side and 4 on the dark side of the room. These spokes representing the sabbats of the wheel of the year. Look closer in each half of the room. Look through the light side of the room. It contains items which represent those things you have accomplished during the past light half of the year. While you're looking in the light half of the room, take stock of what you have accomplished. Of what you have learned. Of how you have grown during the light half of the year. Examples might include your physical health, improvements in your spiritual health, connections with friends, connections with loved ones, with your family. Career success, improvements in your prosperity, How have you grown? What do you have to harvest? Now we turn to the dark half of the room. You see it contains items which represent those things you are still working on for yourself. Those things that are not complete. And while you're looking in the dark half of the room, take stock of what you are still working on or wish to accomplish, to learn, or grow. What do you still have to do? Some of these examples might include improving your physical health, improving your spiritual health, connections with friends, connections with loved ones, connections with family. Career goals. And in any other ways that you wish to grow or improve yourself. Now you move to the center of the room. Stand in the middle of the 8-spoked wheel illustrated on the floor. Stand so the one hand is in the light half of the room and the other in the dark. Hold your hands out to your side. And feel the balance between the two halves of the room. How are you balanced? Which half feels heavier? The light or the dark? The things you have accomplished, the things yet to accomplish. Have you accomplished more than you have to accomplish? Or do you have more to do? Take a moment and reflect on your balance. What do you need to do to even the balance or alter it to a more favorable feeling. When you have taken stock of your balance, move back to the door. Open it, and as you walk through, we'll count back up. As you pass through the door, you see in your mind the number 12. 12. You see in your mind the number 11. 11. You see in your mind the number 10. 10. See in your mind the number 9. 9. You see in your mind the number 8. 8. In your mind, the number 7. 7. You see in your mind, the number 6. 6. In your mind, the number 5. 5. You see in your mind, the number 4. 4. You see in your mind, the number 3. 3. See in your mind the number 2. 2. You see in your mind the number 1. 1. And as the number fades, you return to wakefulness. And we've completed our journey. And as we end our journey, we end our ritual, we thank the God, Mabon, the great God of the harvest. We thank you for being with us on this day. God of the waning sun, shine your light of inspiration upon us as we enter the dark time of the year. Harvest God, we thank you. Caradwyn, Great Mother Goddess, we thank you for being with us on this day. Grant us the powers of introspection from your cauldron of wisdom, and protect us as we journey into the cold months of the year. Mother Goddess, we thank you.
And as we turn back to face our directions,
We face the direction north. Spirits of the earth, we thank you for your grounding influence and your stability during our ritual. Spirits of the earth, we thank you. And we next turn to the west. Spirits of water, we thank you for the nourishment of life and your healing energies during our ritual. Spirits of the water, we thank you. And as you now turn to face the south, spirits of fire, we thank you for your passion and warmth of the season during our ritual. Spirits of fire, we thank you. And lastly, spirits of the air in the east, we thank you for the winds of change and the inspiration you've given us during our ritual. Spirits of air, we thank you. And as you look back, you look around you, and you see those tendrils of light that have reached out to connect all of those during this time and this space and beyond. Know that as these lights fade back into yourselves, that the energy remains. And as you see the light around you begin to close closer and closer to back within yourself, know and remember that that light, that energy, is always there, and that you are always connected to the members of your community. And as Buttons says, the circle is open, but never broken. Merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again.
Blessed be.
Blessed be.
I love that.
You heard that, right?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
As Buttons says.
Yes, she had to come back and... Mm-hmm. Stand upon me as I was finishing this. She couldn't help but, you know, add her 2 cents. So, there you go.
There you go. People should listen to cats more often. Well, thank you. I know it was kind of rushed because we were talking about all the other stuff ahead, but that was a great ritual.
Yeah, and, you know, I think this is a good ritual for someone who is, you know, if they're by themselves. It can be a really good time for some, you know, looking at the inside and looking at, you know, things introspectively.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, especially as we head into the dark half of the year, it's good to take that step at the balance. And, you know, we've got a lot of stuff coming up with the dark half of the year. Speaking of coming up, you know, we've got Samhain on the way, which is all about, you know, those who've passed and death and such, which is kind of the topic of Galena's show on the way. That's just minutes away. Looking forward to that. And then next week on Pagan Warrior Radio is the Pagan Military Service Ribbon Award Ceremony. So if you are interested in getting recognized for your service as a Pagan Service member, look it up on look up the information and get underway with what you need to do at www.circlesanctuary.org, as well as more information that Circle Sanctuary does for military members and just in general, so much that Circle Sanctuary does. So, David and Jeanette, thank you for a wonderful ceremony. Do you have anything to add before we go? We don't really need to do the blessing since that the ritual pretty much covers it.
Sure did. We just want to make sure that we mention that this coming weekend, if those of you who might be in the New Orleans area, Selena Fox will be at the Greater New Orleans Pagan Pride Day. That's GNOPPD.org is their website, on this coming weekend. And then on the 5th, she'll be at the South Jersey Pagan Pride Day, and I'll be joining her there. We'll do a warrior blessing and present some pagan military service ribbons then on October 5th in the South Jersey Pagan Pride. So those are some of the things going on. I know Circle's got their Samhain coming up. They've already, I think, opened up registration and stuff for that. It sounds pretty amazing to go to for those in that area who can make it to Wisconsin for Circle, for Samhain. And, of course, there's always excitement about PSG, and we'll start talking about Pagan Spirit Gathering as the winter rolls on and we start dreaming of summer.
I'm dreaming of winter right now, though. I'm really eager for that to happen. So have a great week, and brightest blessings for your week to come. And we'll see you next week, David and Jeanette.
Cool. Take care.
Good night.
Live. Join your host, author, and Northern Tradition Shaman, Galina Kraskova, with guests from across the contemporary spectrum of pagan, heathen, and polytheistic communities for an hour of in-depth and thought-provoking discussions on a variety of community issues, news, controversies, and practices. Come and learn new things and deepen your understanding of polytheism and explore what it means to be actively engaged in the restoration of ancestral traditions. It's a good day to be an animist, folks. Tune in and join us at 10, 9 Central on the first and third Wednesdays of every month. Weird Ways Radio.
Weird Ways Radio.
Weird Ways Radio.
Weird Ways.
We call now upon our honored dead. We ask that they guide the work we do tonight. We call upon our grandmothers and our grandfathers, our warrior dead, our loving dead, and all those whose sacrifices and hopes paved the way for us to be here today. We are our ancestors' victory, the sum total of their hopes and dreams walking. May they ever be honored. We call upon mitochondrial Eve, our eldest mother, to rip the filter from our eyes. May she ever be honored. We call upon her mighty daughters to witness the words we speak here tonight. May they too be honored. May we speak together with reason, clarity, and integrity. May our ancestors guide us. May our words and discussions do honor both our beloved dead and the holy powers we revere. May it be.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Weird Ways Live. Tonight we have a really interesting guest. But first, I'm here with my co-host, Sanyan. Can you hear me, Sanyan?
I can hear you just fine.
Welcome. And welcome to all my listeners. Tonight we're going to be speaking with Jack Faust, and he runs the Dionysian Atavism blog at vonfaustus.blogspot.com, and he is a ceremonial magician and, I believe, a devotee of Hecate. So let me see if I can get him on the line here. Jack, can you hear it?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can.
I can hear you just fine.
Excellent.
Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
I know. There's something about being on the radio. I'm like, oh, I get butterflies every time before we go live. So
Every time.
Zion recently turned me on to your blog, and again for my listeners, that's vontastis.blogspot.com, and I've been delighted to see some of the articles that you've been posting on honoring the dead and dealing with the restless dead, and topics like that, because obviously if for anyone who has looked even in a cursory manner at my work, dealing with the dead is a huge part of my practice. So I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about what you do.
At present, I largely research things, but that's done in between doing regular offerings for Hecate, if I said her name right. and generally just trying to feel the atmosphere, understand what's going on around me. I work as much as I do with, I guess you could call them the dead, with nature spirits, the spirits of the city.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
City spirits are interesting. I maintain a practice dealing. I'm not one. I know there's this impression that if you're pagan, you must be in love with nature. And yeah, no, I'd much rather be in a city.
I resonate much better
with city spirits. I can talk to them, I can engage with them, I have a good rapport with them.
Yeah, I find that they're very different, city spirits, to what you'll find out in the forest or on the borderlands just beyond the city, you know, the foothills in California, things like that. I live in California, so. but the city has its own flow to it. You are as likely to come across an elemental in a park as you are to come across something haunting a house.
Absolutely.
And it completely changes how you see and interact with your direct environment when you start noticing those things around you. Furthermore, they make great allies.
Yeah, no, I've noticed that as well. The way that just my everyday life improved, actually, once I started. So I lived in New York City for quite a long time. And when I finally kind of opened my eyes and started engaging with the city spirit, with the primary city spirit, it completely changed my experience of living in the city and made it flow so much more smoothly.
Yeah, and just about anybody can get started with that by going to, say, the five oldest buildings in their city and just spending some time meditating on what the building is like, doing some research on what the building is like, and then you can enter an altered state of consciousness and procure, like, a sigil or a seal for the spirit. I normally see them actually in the spirit if I see the spirit, which is not always the case. And as soon as you copy it down, you can take it back home with you. You can work with them from your home. You can give offerings to them from your home, or you can do it directly at the building. And they will aid you in innumerable ways. It depends on the type of spirit, of course. And not all of them are friendly.
There are certain city spirits that I found that are just nasty.
I
won't mention the city because I don't want to be getting nasty emails from the people that live there. But there is a city on the East Coast that every spirit worker that I've talked to, every magician that I've talked to, they're like, oh, my God, she's so nasty.
I feel that way about my former hometown in California. So
I actually find that having a good relationship with the spirit of the town where I live, it nourishes me. Like, I can feel when I travel quite a bit, and when I come back, I feel nourished. Like, she sustains me in a very, very personal way, to the point that I don't really like to travel a lot, because I have my relationships with the city spirit, with the mountain spirit, and they nourish me. And that was certainly not the case before I started, I'll say, paying cultists, although it's not quite cultists, but, you know, close enough to make no never mind.
I'm a magician. With those of us, all titles are fairly flexible, unless you really see yourself as one thing. And I'm kind of a jack of all trades, so.
That's probably what, in my definition, that makes you a good magician.
I guess.
You do what works.
I'm also very sometimes practical. Sometimes I don't have the skills to do something specific, but.
I know. I'm like, does it work? Well, then I might try that. You know, let me do what works.
Yeah.
The magic is about getting shit done.
The most important thing is does it work? Can you get an effect? And if you have that, then the next question is, you know, can I make this work better? How can I synchronize with this material better? How can I understand it better? And from that, everything else just kind of flows.
Absolutely. Now, did you start engaging with city spirits because of your work with Hecate, or was that something that you did simultaneously and separate, or was there a cause and effect there?
It happened in stages. The first time I got to the astral, I began babbling to my friends that I'd been to the land of the dead. And the more Kabbalistic friends I had were like, nobody goes there. That doesn't happen. And I kept insisting, no, I really think I was seeing dead people. But I didn't seek to do any necromancy specifically for quite a while. It's been a more recent element in my life. The last 4 years or so, it's built more and more. Hecate came first, and I found myself doing rituals at graveyards that were on the outskirts of town. One was right next to a trivium. It was fantastic. You could go in,
put down a nice
circle, and just by scribing it with your dagger in you know, the the dirt and do your rituals, you could incubate properly. All sorts of things. But I used to wander aimlessly through my city anyway, and I started noticing spirits, and it just kind of coincided that I was like, what if I could try and work with them all the time?
No, and I think that's so essential. I mean, like, so many pagans and polytheists don't have any kind of engagement with the place that they live, and, you know, it's like their stuff is so kind of generic that it could be done anywhere, and therefore, you know, I think lacks a kind of vitality and connection that is so essential to, you know, ancient polytheisms. So
yeah,
I definitely think it's...
I mean, the Roman genius Loci were in some senses gods of cities, and in other senses you also have genius Loci that were spirits living at the crossroads. My understanding is ruling over agrarian matters. And so interacting with your environment has always been very important to, I think, either the practice of magic or even understanding your religious context, because everything we do is grounded in where we live. When we read, you know, the epic myths in Greek mythology, they're taking place simultaneously in the spirit world at times and simultaneously in the lands they're traveling in, the places they're interacting with, the people they are meeting. And if you lose that, you run the risk of hiding in your house all the time and never getting out, never seeing anything. And you can serve the community from your house, but when I think of serving the community, for me it's more of the spirits in my city than the individuals, because I'm kind of a jerk.
No, I agree with you there. And I think one of the things, certainly when I was living in New York, that I would see quite a bit is pagans, polytheists, and magicians who would focus so much on almost fetishizing nature and the natural world that there wasn't really an awareness that, well, the city that you live in is natural too and it's alive.
Right. And I feel really lucky because I live in Sacramento. So I live in a city just filled with parks. Most of the housing districts are centered around parks from downtown to midtown. So I can just walk through looking at old Victorian homes and, you know, in the middle of the night and interacting with things in the parks. But not everybody has that. So you have to kind of keep an eye out for where to go and what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, like, all practice has to be engaged and experimental. And, you know, you got to get your hands dirty if you want to get any kind of results.
Right. Right. And often when I talk to people that are worried about getting their hands dirty, it's just because they haven't been exposed to practices that will help keep problems from being really problematic. That's kind of redundant, but whatever.
Now, you used the term earlier, necromancy, and, you know, because
yes.
I'm an ancestor worker, I'd just like you to define that. What do you mean by that? Because I'm guessing that some of our listeners will probably have quite a few incorrect preconceptions.
Well, I mean, the most literal definition that I know of the word is literally divination by means of the dead. And necromancy happened at sites in Greece and Rome. Left in Rome, they were very iffy about the dead. They had a very much more ambivalent relationship with them than even the Greeks did. But there were sites where you could go if you were being attacked by a ghost, or you had specific problems that you felt the dead could reveal to you, and you would go to a site like the Oracle at Delphi, or the sites on the Acheron. The Oracle at Delphi is Chthonic, if I said that word right, but it's not necessarily necromantic. At the Acheron, there were actual divinatory sites, or oracular sites, where you could meet with somebody who would pretty much look like act as a medium for this spirit, while somebody else acted as an evocator, drawing either a spirit out of the land of the dead or interacting with that spirit magically. And they would give you answers on how to either make the dead happy because they were unhappy with you. For example, if you, say, had a family member that was unburied and the ghost was harassing you, or you were really unlucky and somebody died in an accident or you murdered them and their ghost was harassing you, or an intermediary acting on the demands of the ghost, because they kind of, if you do them wrong, they were thought to sit around complaining, and other, say, higher spirits, higher demons, would hear them and perhaps even pursue you for vengeance. And so when I refer to necromancy, it refers to some of those practices, but also to a school called Goetia. Maybe mm-hmm. it might be more right to call it a form of shamanism, and the term literally translates to lamenting or wailing. It was the noise that the Goes, people who practice Goetia, made to commune with the spirit, and eventually they were thought to ecstatically travel with the spirit into the underworld so they would no longer sit around bothering everyday folk. I don't feel confident bringing a spirit into the underworld and showing it where to go, so I don't do a lot of that, but I will entrust the spirit to Hecate by attracting it with a meal that I leave at a crossroad if it is a particular problem.
Okay.
In other senses, I'm just as happy to leave cool water out for them, to leave flowers for them, to leave sweets. Fruits covered in honey is a really orphic and great way to deal with the dead. And I will leave that at specific locations for them. Sometimes afterwards I'll return in a few days, and if it's still there, I'll bury it. Sometimes I'll just leave it and let what happens happen. But it's a means of saying, hey, I know you're here, and I know you're unhappy, so if you'll take this, maybe you will be less unhappy. You know, people do notice you. People do think about you. Have some flowers.
And that is really important work, I think.
I would agree with you.
I think so, too. We had an event at the park behind my house where all the fish rapidly died in the pond in it. And the entire area just became polluted as hell. It was almost as if spirits in the area, they might have even been nature spirits, I'm not really sure, were attacking people, but it smelled like sewage. I performed an offering to Hecate and the dead at the site, and within 3 days the city cleaned out all the dead fish and began taking measures to put new fish in that weren't dead. And it was weird because at the end of my prayer, while I faced the west doing the supper, which is something I actually took from Mandrake, not actually in the Hecate supper academic work I've seen. I had a brief vision of, like, spirit fishes gathering around a lunar goddess, and I was like, well, that's different. But it cleaned up really, really rapidly. I was shocked how quick it was.
Yeah, somebody just messaged me because I keep my email open so I can take, for people who don't want to call in, I can take questions.
Right.
Someone
right.
said sometimes all the dead want is to be noticed, and I think
right.
that's there's something to that.
There is, although with the restless dead, I do have to urge a bit of caution because as likely as you are to meet somebody who just ended up stuck in a bad place, you are also likely to come across someone you don't want to interact with at all.
Absolutely.
And if they decide to harass you, that's a huge problem, and it can be very hard to end.
Well, part of the problem is that so many people doing this work have no connection to their own elevated ancestors. I mean, they go in like gangbusters. And
I'm not sure I do, to be fair, but...
But you have Hecate at your back, which is something.
I do, and I have rituals like the Steel of Ju, the Rite of the Headless God from the Greek Magical Papyri, that I do not only fairly routinely, but if something becomes a real problem, because part of that actual ritual is an exorcism. It's not the entire ritual itself. There is something else going on there, but... The exorcism function is very much in line with it. And if you don't have authorities, if you will, to
mm-hmm.
authorize what you're doing, getting rid of the dead can be almost impossible. And if they have business with you, you are very unlikely to get rid of them.
And this is why I tell people, you know, just keep yourself in right relationship with your dead and... Rein in that curiosity if you don't have the authority to do what you're doing because
right.
really I don't want to come
right.
clean up your mess.
We don't have necromancy sites for you to visit an oracle anymore as far as I know. There may be some Hellenic folks that are doing similar work that I'm just unaware of. But you can always perform divination to see what is going on. If something feels wrong, you know, look at the planets in the sky. Is a malefic planet or star dominating the astral on a given day? Well, then that's probably not an issue with the dead, you know. And then
there are people in the Norse tradition that are doing this type of work. I mean, what you're describing as necromancy is a huge part of what I do. And I have half a dozen
yes.
colleagues for whom I could say
yes.
the same. Somebody just
have...
emailed me. And I think that this is salient. She said what she runs into is people who want the dead gone, but you don't always want them gone. It's like people who say, how do you cleanse a house? I'm like, well, maybe that spirit has a right to be there and you don't.
Right.
You know, this is
like,
you mentioned divination.
Sorry.
And that comes into it. Like divine to figure out
yeah.
what's going on and what you have the lawful
yeah.
right
yeah.
and the authority to do.
Most definitely. And when it comes to that divination, you know, asking a pendulum questions can be very revealing because you have to format them in yes or no answers. So it depends on your question. So you can
uh-huh.
you can start asking the pendulum, you know, is this spirit supposed to be here? You know, asking an authority, I mean. Some magicians call on their holy guardian angel.
Uh-huh.
I would probably call him Mercury or Hermes.
I think for me, I would call Hermes. I would call my own military dead. I have an honor guard of a lot of military
yes.
dead. I would call
yes.
a couple of my ancestors, you know.
Yes, yes. And as you were earlier saying, a lot of heathens do work with the dead. Working with whites is so similar in some respects to...
And
Greek
for those who may not know, that is W-I-G-H-T. It is an Anglo-Saxon word that simply means spirit.
not the color.
heathens, I'm sorry, most heathens, they don't have anything approaching the ancestor practices that I think they ought to have. There are some northern tradition practitioners, spirit workers, shamans, who call it, you know, spirit workers and shamans who are trying our damnedest to bring... to get the practices rooted, but, you know, it's an uphill battle.
Well, I feel like it's always going to be an uphill battle because when you are talking about the dead, people become uneasy in and of itself. And it's not necessarily something that I would recommend everybody do.
I would at least recommend honoring your ancestors. I don't think everybody
right.
should be
and everybody can do that.
Yeah. But it's a fight in heathen circles to get them to pour out water for their ancestors. I'm like, come on, you're here because of them. Suck it up.
Oh, yeah, no, I give mine whiskey.
Yeah.
I know some folks that are like, when working with your ancestors, don't get them drunk. But I'm like, everybody should be drunk. It's a proper Dionysian thing.
You know, half the fun of being dead is that you can drink. I give them tobacco, whiskey, food, whatever alcohol
they
want.
Oh, yeah, tobacco is a very, you know, working with certain types of fairies, working with certain types of nature spirits, working with some of the dead, tobacco is a great offering. Other plants attuned to the dead work just as well. If you can grow some mandrake or, God say it, some henbane, that might work. But, you know, they're poisonous plants, so take some care with it.
You don't want to munch on them first.
I mean, I can't grow.
I would not recommend munching on them.
Then you'll be one of the dead. And
I make flying potions that have a bit of mandrake root in them. But I was taught how to do it by some of the witch folks that I work with. And that's not a secret or anything. I actually at some point will probably put out a recipe for it in later years. But at current, you know, it works very well, but I'm very, it's very diluted.
I know for some of the trance work that I do when I really, really, really need to open up and it's just been one of those days where it's a fight, I'll use a journey salve that has henbane and mandrake and a couple of other things in it.
Yeah, they're very good
to internal resistance.
They're excellent allies. My discussions with mandrake have indicated the plant wants to work with more people. There just aren't more people that know about it. And, of course, with that also comes the risk that eventually people are going to be doing stupid things with it. But it's always a risk.
You know, I think we can there's a saying, I think it's Schiller, that against stupidity, even the gods struggle in vain.
Yeah,
I think
like there's some videos on YouTube of people doing salvia and then, you know, acting really stupid. And it's like, really? I mean, like, I've tried that, and that, you know, I don't get that reaction from it.
No, I don't either.
It's not a fun substance to be on.
No, if you want a good time plant that is happy to party with you and you can take as much as you want, it's marijuana.
Yep.
Alcohol will eventually kill you. Pot won't. But, sorry.
No, this is important because I think that there's a lot of push in various communities. Oh, I want this plant ally and that ally, and I found my spirit totem. I'm like, so you found it. You do realize that's an ongoing, lifelong relationship of respect that you have now initiated. You found it. That's great. Now what?
Yeah,
right.
And plus, I mean,
and
like,
I mean,
a lot of people just think of these substances as drugs, you know, like, but they're spirits,
oh, they're
and they're
not.
You know, entities.
They're not. Mandrake was literally treated as a familiar spirit in areas of Germany. Jacob Grimm complains about the Gaugenmandelin. I think I'm saying that somewhere near correct, and it's basically a mandrake familiar that's employed. It's very similar to a ritual that shows up in Mastering Witchcraft by Paul Hewson, where you make a household guardian called a magistelt, and you form it out of either Alrun or mandrake, and sometimes mandrake is considered Alrun, but that's kind of iffy. Still working on the scholarship there.
Yeah, I mean, people asked me before, it's like, oh, you're a shaman, what are your plant allies? And I'll say sarcastically, caffeine, tobacco, and the spirit of the vine. But I mean it. And tea.
Well, oh, yeah.
But I mean
I
interact with the spirit.
Definitely. They are spirits in and of themselves. They have an influence over you. If you anger some of them, they can take revenge on you. I met a guy that had smoked Datura and offended the plant, and it wasn't until he was in Mexico and a brujo came up to him, and it was like, you've been cursed by the hag. You've been cursed by the witch of Datura. You need to clean this up.
Oh, that's not fun.
Yeah, he said his life got immediately better after these cleansing rituals, but up until then it had been complete shit, and he just never made the connection that his life went to shit about the time he'd smoked the Datura.
Yeah.
And he's lucky because, you know, she gave him a slap on the wrist. What she could have done is kill him.
Yeah, yeah. It's a risk with many, 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 many different types, especially the magical plants. Although there are some you run less risks with. Mint, vervain, rosemary, those are all benevolent allies. I've never seen them to act wrong towards anyone. Frankincense and myrrh, stuff that people use to purify their homes when they're doing
stuff. Yeah, mugwort is a good one, too. She's very giving.
Mugwort is fantastic. Most definitely.
That tends to be the one I start my if I have a student that comes to me saying I want to learn plant medicine, I'm like, well, I'm not the teacher for you. But why don't you start with mugwort? You know, you can talk to her, and she's usually very giving.
I recommend rosemary to everybody, and that they establish first a relationship with rosemary and then with the muses. But we do grow mugwort here.
I just had someone message me and say, rosemary hates me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It happens.
Sorry. That's one of my favorite cleansing plants. It's one of my favorites.
Sometimes it just happens, though. I mean, you know, there. I can't think of one right now, but there are, not so much with plants, but certainly there are spirits that we do not have a rapport.
I'm pretty iffy about Christian angels and archangels in certain respects. Sometimes I'll work with them, and sometimes I'm like, I can just go this other place. It's kind of unfortunate, though, because there are really great Greek magical papyri rituals to work with, like Ogdoas and Judeo-Christian angels. They just break your brain because you have an Egyptian high god sitting side by side with completely Judeo-Christian rituals.
I know, but the archangels, my understanding is they predate Christianity. That I look at them as kind of like systems admins. They scare the crap out of me.
Some of them do, like when people do like Golden Dawn work, some of like Oreo, I believe there's a similar angelic name in the PGM, but I believe the name Oriel specifically comes from the Golden Dawn. I may be wrong, though. But
all I know is some of them scare the crap out of me. I mean, I show respect.
You wouldn't want to piss off an angel.
No, I mean, they're systems admins for the universe. They keep the fabric of the, they keep the coding of the universe functioning properly.
Very similar.
And there's a reason why in the Bible, anytime an angel appears, the first thing they say to a person is, "Fear not."
Yeah,
that should tell you something.
Be about to, like, smite you.
Or it could be the hundreds of eyes they've got all over their body and the wings of flame and stuff.
Oh, God, man. Well, I mean, but that you can get that imagery from a lot of different spirits. It's funny because in a certain respect, you can really figure out what you're dealing with by the way it appears to you, especially if you've evoked it into a mirror or something like that. But in other respects, they shapeshift, so they can show up looking however the hell they want, and how your brain actually parses that information can be really tricky.
No, that's so true. So much of what we see with the powers, I really do think it's filtered through the lens of our own minds. I mean, otherwise it would break our brain. I mean, it would do us harm. Otherwise, that capacity to filter is something that's a grace.
But of course, everything in the world is filtered through our brain and our senses, you know. I mean, that's the thing that a lot of people don't get. They often dismiss, you know, experiences on drugs by saying that it's a chemical thing, but love is a chemical thing. Hunger is a chemical thing.
Yes, the chemical reaction is happening, but that's not to say that you're not interacting with something. Your body is fundamentally, literally interacting with something, because when those chemicals interlock with the neurotransmitters and other aspects of the brain, they cause chain reactions. And similar events happen when you do magic or practice spirituality, if you want a more all-inclusive way of putting it. You know, people can go to a Catholic church and see angels, and people can go out into the middle of the wilderness and call on their divine ancestors in Odin. And people, you know, all of these are processes which cause changes in the way we perceive things. And if you miss that, you run the risk of, I think, being dogmatic. And being overly dogmatic when it comes to certain practices is kind of a problem. Like, it can very much help if you're only going to focus on, say, Renaissance astrology. But outside of that, it's not terribly useful.
And I think that that's the way that we filter our experiences, that lens, without some context, without some lens, I really do think that not only could we become terribly fundamentalist, but we could become terribly crazy as well and unhinged.
Well, I think you run unhinged. I would say that you always run the risk of being crazy, but I do really crazy things sometimes that blow up in my face. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
Crazy in a non-productive
Speaking of
way,
crazy, how would you answer the accusation that is often in the Hellenic community that the ancient Greeks didn't practice magic?
I would say that there are innumerable instances in which not only do we see the ancient Greeks practicing magic, both in their literature and in the records and complaints of their contemporaries, and in the fact that it cast a large influence over many traditions of magic that came after it. Don't get me wrong, we haven't. More research needs to be done into Germanic and Eastern European magical traditions and how they came to be presented in our culture at large. But at the same time, we have really well-documented areas where we can point to, like, the Greek magical papyri, which were done by Greco-Roman magicians, most likely Roman, I think, but they were probably from all over. I think there's a very high likelihood that they were itinerant, similar to like, the Orphic priests that wandered. But even in that, are you guys still there?
Yeah,
I'm just thinking, I'm cheering, I'm a classicist. I'm doing my PhD in classics, and whenever I hear the Greeks didn't practice magic, I just want to
You need only crack open Ogden's Greek and Roman Necromancy, Sarah Isles Johnston's Restless Dead, or even another really good one is George Luck's Arcana Mundi. And all of those have major, major, major aspects of magic. Even in the purely theurgical traditions, like the Chaldean oracles, we see them doing things that are curiously similar to what the guys that used the PGM did. They seem to have acquired the magical words that would command the gods. And in fact, some of the suggestion we get from the scholars that look into this stuff is that the gods themselves gave them those codes. This isn't blasphemy. It's not like they weren't doing something they weren't authorized to do. They were authorized to do it, and the god gave them that code so they could do it. Whether or not
that's really important.
Another thing.
I think what you just said there is crucial.
Yep.
But a lot of non theistic practicing folks wouldn't like my saying that. So I don't want to say that all magic is that. You can do plenty of things on your own. And in
fact, I agree,
where that happens.
But I think that is a totally other discussion. I think that's a valid discussion that needs to happen. But so many people in the Hellenic community aren't even at that level. Like, they're not even admitting that magic happened, even though there's all this tons and tons of evidence and,
right.
you know, going back to, you know, like the very earliest period in Greek history,
yeah.
there's, you know, evidence of magical charms and stuff, but they're like completely ignoring this. And, you know, so I loved hearing you say that. That was just wonderful. Thank you.
No problem. I mean, you know, it doesn't make sense if you look back at, like, Plato complaining about goetes and
mm-hmm.
and their practices. As they, the look of it, you know, initially in his early days, he praises Eros as the daemon of love and all these great things. And then he says he's also the daemon of Goetia. Later on in Plato's career, he says, you know, anybody who says they can command the god, lead the dead, or do these things, they are evil men. And we should not allow them in our cities. If you're an augur or an oracle, you should be executed. And if you're just an amateur, you should have penance representative to what you've done. And,
yeah.
yeah.
But, of course, with that, you have to take into consideration what Plato was writing. I mean, that comes from the laws, which is like this idealized
right.
system.
Right.
And he's also
right.
putting that in the mouth of certain conservative characters. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, all of Plato's dialogues are basically, like, you know, dramas. And, you know, so I often see people take quotes out of context and say, Plato said this, you know, when it was really just, you know, one of his characters. And often he, you know, puts that in just to debunk it. So, you know.
That, there is that, too. although I think he made a couple other references to Goetia. I can't think of them offhand. But
yeah.
Generally, by the time he has conservative individuals saying things like that, you have a backlash against the popularity of such practices.
Mm-hmm.
Even by the time that Pliny the Elder is writing about magic in Greece and Rome,
yeah.
you see a ton of magical practices. As much as Pliny complains about magicians, he constantly says, oh, well, and there's this ritual or this thing you could do that the magicians say will make this happen, but that's stupid.
mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, like the rope of a hanged man to cure a headache.
yep. yeah, and it's interesting because actually, you know, like beginning with like Middle Platonism and stuff, there's a strong interest in magic in that, you know, philosophical
there
school.
Is.
And like
there
Plutarch, a lot of his, you know, stuff is very important, especially like, you know, his whole piece on Socrates' daemon. I mean, that's got some great, you know, magical
oh,
theory
yeah.
and. And then,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
like the later Neoplatonists are all pretty much magicians, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Iamblichus is filled with elements that are distinctly magical. And if you
mm-hmm.
ignore that, you're missing a hefty chunk of theurgy. And,
yeah.
and it, part of the problem, I think, is that we have dissected theurgy from magic in general. We think of it as this high spiritual practice that magicians themselves never did. And even in the Chaldean oracles, I'm thinking of Louis' tome. There are complaints about people that insist on doing certain practices while they're not purified. And they get lambasted because, you know, the demons that are sent by Hecate, the theurgical demons, are going to torment them. And they should not be allowed to do this. Well, the actual magicians that operated in that era, they knew this stuff. They knew how to purify themselves beforehand. They knew how to keep themselves clean. In fact, I would argue that if you do that stuff, you are forced into it. What I imagine is I end up taking so many showers, it's not even funny. Cold one, running water, plus some cleansing plants and you know, some
mm-hmm.
either some orisons or something else.
I think the practices make you ultra sensitive to that which is not clean.
Yeah, well...
At least I've noticed, with my own practice.
You can manipulate that which is not clean if you want to do specific things. In the PGM, there are several rituals where you basically are compelling Biothanatos daemons, the violent deaths, to go in the name of Hecate, of all things, and possess someone you want to love someone. Most likely this was done for a client rather than a specific individual, like a magician themselves, but it's possible they use them as well. And once the spirit possesses and obsesses them, they are basically tormented and sickened until they'll love you. I think it's fucked up and you shouldn't do it, but it's
in. Oh, absolutely. I know. I was thinking no magician I know is that stupid, but, you know,
clients want what clients want.
When it comes to love magic, you don't need a lot more than a candle, a sigil, and a prayer to Venus on a Friday.
And would you want to acquire a partner by the magical equivalent of
Rome? Right, who's possessed by the dead? Do you want to have sex with somebody possessed by the dead? Now, that sounds pretty awesome. it may sound hot, but keep in mind, this is somebody that died a horrible, terrible death and is in a constant state of distress, unease, and maybe even hate.
Even better.
All right, well, Sandy and I wants to have sex with those people, but I would prefer my partner to actually be attracted and in love with me.
You can
do a magical ritual to open the door to meet them. It works just as well. It keeps them from obsessing over you in a bad way, which can totally happen. I've heard anecdotes but never done it, of people obsessed by magical love rituals, the compulsive one.
Well, it can backfire, and you can become the one obsessed.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the fact that...
I would argue if you do it, you already are obsessed. That's why you're doing it. You probably can't. You're probably thinking of them constantly, and that's not love, that's obsession.
I'm like, just go, cleanse yourself, make a nice offering to Aphrodite or Venus, or one of the ladies, what I call the ladies of the pink building, you know, your goddesses who tend to oversee matters of the heart, and call it a day, okay?
Yeah, and, you know, keep in mind that that's a normal human reaction. You're just acting on it is the bad thing, you know?
I want to step in here because I do want to open the phone lines. If anyone's interested in calling in, and asking a question or commenting, our number is 347-308-8222. 347-308-8222. So don't be shy. If you have a question for our guest or for one of us, feel free to call in. All right, got that out there. Now back to talking about why you really shouldn't try to do love magic on a person.
Well, I mean, you know, it is part of Goetia.
Oh, it is. I mean, and you know, my earliest magical training was hoodoo, and I was there are so many things that you can do there. You know, love and money are the two big ones. But just because you can do something doesn't mean it's really sensible to do something.
And sometimes it's very tempting to do a few of them.
Figuring that out.
Yeah. I have a great respect for Afro-Caribbean traditions of magic and here in the Americas, hoodoo. Truly amazing that is the magic of the Americas that has arisen, in my opinion. It's kind of sad that we don't have more focused traditions like some of the other things that come out of those areas of practice, but nonetheless, I really like hoodoo.
I think the other major system of magic that came out of the Americas is marketing and advertising. I mean, the most potent sigil in the world is the Coke. I mean, Dalai Lama drinks Coke, you know?
As a chaos magician, when I say that to people, they sometimes get very upset with me.
Yep.
But I think that the best magicians that are currently active, and they are, to a certain extent, evil magicians, are advertising. They are there to sell you something you don't need.
Oh, yeah.
And to make
and
you
manipulate
you
behavior.
It.
And
right.
It's all very potent form of magic.
Oh,
and
totally.
Words. I mean, it goes back to, you know, Hermes as the inventor of words and inventor of magic.
Image magic, too. You know, the manipulation of images for magical results. That's in there. Whenever we see pretty people trying to sell us things, these are clearly ideals that are being set up for us. And all of it is very suspect, and it's the reason I don't watch a lot of TV, although I watch...
Oh, yeah, me either.
No, I know. Same here.
But I just don't... I already, since I wander through the city, I see enough advertising as it is that I don't feel like I need something else.
No.
Yeah, I'm very careful about what I watch because it's insidious. I want to be in control of what what's patterning my mind as much as possible. I have a question from someone who does not want to call in, but does want us to talk about. She said, have you had any experiences with animal dead? You had mentioned a fish, and if there's a way that you honor them or engage with them. She's very interested in animal dead. She's like, can you ask him about animal dead?
That's, unfortunately, since I'm a city boy, I have much less influence or experience in that matter. But I occasionally I'll come across like a struck squirrel or something, and I will bury it, and I'll read it like the Orphic Hymn to Thanatos. or I will, you know, do something to honor it. I may water that area where it's been. And I think that's really great work. It's just something that I don't do enough of.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, I don't think everybody has to do all the different kinds of works, you know, like, different people are called to different things because they have different aptitudes. And
Right. And you know, that's something that even magicians in the circles I travel in struggle with, because there's so much good stuff out there that you could spend billions of lifetime just pursuing it all.
Trying
to decide which specific thing to do is really hard. It's where divination and some insight and good spiritual allies come in. But,
absolutely.
You know.
What advice would you give for someone just starting out? I mean, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I know that one of the questions that people often ask me is, well, what do I do? I'm just starting.
Okay, first of all, you need to get some basic trance work in. Everybody needs to do it. I don't care if they learn to meditate, pursuing more Eastern systems, or if they just learn really simple meditation techniques like using a specific word with an in-breath and an out-breath being held for several breaths or something along those lines until they start feeling trance, auto-hypnotic stuff. Then you have your other basics. You know, learn to make sigils. They're really easy. I've made 4,900 of them, you know, during my 15 or whatever years. This is a method of both being able to act on the world and communicate with spirit. You can use a sigil to tell a spirit to do something. More importantly, you can pull this, a sigil of a spirit from them once you become sufficient in the method. And that will allow you to interact with them better. Let's say you have that sigil now, you can take it to your bed, you can lay down after doing a very basic, you know, in and out ritual, opening and closing. There are Wiccan methods of doing that, there are Golden Dawn methods of doing that. Just really, you know, choose one, try it, you know, afterwards put the sigil under your pillow, take a nap. And you're literally performing incubatio, dream incubation. The god and the spirit can then come in through into your dreams and interact with you. Read as much as you can or focus on something to read and learn a system of divination, because if you don't have a method of finding out what you're doing is right or wrong, then you are forever going to labor in the dark.
I agree with that, and one of the things that I often recommend to my students is a book called Spiritual Protection by Sophie Reicher, and it's all the basics. It's grounding, centering, basic trance work, cleansing. I agree with the system of divination. And this isn't something, folks, that you just sit down one weekend and decide you're going to learn. This is something you commit to for an extended period.
And you'll find that if you start having a good time, it will kind of be something you don't have to work at all. It just flows naturally. You want to do it. I very much enjoy doing rituals and reading about rituals and researching where they came from. Not everybody gets to that last part. That's okay. You don't have to worry about that when you're a beginner. When you're a beginner, focus on the basics. You know, those basics will serve you well throughout your career, and if you get good at them, you'll never need to get rid of most of them. You'll try new things. I'm very experimental right now. I'm working with bizarre Catholic liturgy that I never thought I would, in conjunction with other things, you know.
But if you have a grounding in the basics, you have less worry when you go to do other heavier work because you already have a skill set to deal with what comes about. You have a way to answer questions. You have a way to keep things away from you, things like that.
Exactly. No, I couldn't agree more. Do you have any projects in the works now that you want to talk us about?
Well, I'm trying to write a small chapbook on cleansing plants and kind of chthonic cleansing rituals. I don't know how it'll turn out or if it'll ever be published, but I am working on it, and I'm working on several essays on working with the genius Loki, the spirits of your city, that will hopefully appear, and I'll link to them on my blog if and when they do. But sometimes I hate what I've written, and I ignore it for 6 years. So that does happen.
Yeah. No, his blog, folks, is vonfaustus.blogspot.com. And I am usually really, really critical because working with the land spirits and city spirits and ancestors is kind of my métier. This is a phenomenal blog. Go read it. Go away. Come back and read it again and just let it sink in. There's some really, really solid work going on there.
I'm glad people like it. Thank you very much. I always assume that I'm writing for myself, and if other people like it, then that's great. But it's nice.
That
to
is the best way that you can approach writing, you know,
Yeah, because, I mean, it's. I was really impressed when I read it, and I was very happy when Simon told me he'd booked you. I was like, oh, yeah.
And for those unaware of what I write about, you can expect fairies, demons, if you will. I don't necessarily think that term always applies, but whatever. And a ton of other stuff. From magical books, from ancient practices, from some scholar's mouth. And I mostly quote, but occasionally I even add in my own thoughts. I just don't want to, I don't know, overpower it somehow. I have enough of a personality as it is.
But it's good. It's good that people know that there's another resource out there, because I know I have an awful lot of people emailing me or coming to me as, you know, as clients, and like, look, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to begin. So, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
You're a resource.
And I thought the beginner advice you just gave was really brilliant, especially starting with the altered states, because that is so essential. And the rest kind of falls from those basics that you were giving out.
Right. Lots of people want to do the ritual first, and it's like, well, if you don't have some kind of grounding in dealing with it, you're not going to understand what happens. That even happens to experienced practitioners, but it becomes less more rare as you go on.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, magic and ritual and all that, that's an art. And, you know, you're not going to be painting a Picasso. Okay, maybe you could paint a Picasso from scratch, but most of them you wouldn't be able to do that. You know, you got to learn the basics and you got to learn the techniques.
Right, and there are many, many, many good books out there for beginners. I would honestly advise avoiding most Llewellyn books.
You don't say.
But there are some really great authors that work with Llewellyn too. Patrick Dunn's a great one. His postmodern stuff can appeal to just about anyone. It's got a lot of the basics in there that I think is great for everyone. You know, and then there are the good old early chaos magic books that I loved. There are the Northern Tradition books that Ms. Krasnova and others are involved in, and they look really great too. I haven't read all of them, but
yeah, no, there's some good stuff out there, and it's you know, I would encourage you. In other words, I would beg and plead, put up a list of books that you would recommend on your site at some point.
Oh yeah,
I have a list off the top of my head. If you have,
I have a list for necromancy, but I haven't done a list of basic beginner books for a while. I can do that again.
Lovely. And your list for necromancy is actually on your site now?
It should be somewhere in the depths of it, actually. Recently, when Sanion mentioned on his blog that he was going to be talking to me, I relinked back to it. It's got Ogden's Greek and Roman Necromancy in it. It's got Mike C's The Book of Abraxas in it. There's been a really, when it comes to Greek and Greco-Roman necromancy and practices out of the Greek magical papyri and things like that. This last generation that's been publishing more and more in the last couple of years has been really phenomenal. It's a great time to be doing that kind of magic.
I think it'd be great if you put out that recommended list, because there's such a hunger for information right now, because there's so much crap that's been out there, and people, you know, there's not enough teachers, and people just don't know what to do, and they're really struggling with that. So any information that you can get out there to help, I think, is just so essential.
I'm going to jump in here, guys. We actually have a caller.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Jackie, can you hear us? I'm bringing you live now.
Yeah, I can hear you.
You have a question. Welcome.
Well, it's kind of weird. On the last full moon, I did a ritual, and I included money in the ritual. And money did come to me in many strange ways, and it happened even today. And I don't know if it was the ritual or if it was everything happens for a reason. Do you know what I mean?
I don't want to answer, you know, but definitively, but I would think if you put out that intent and then you started getting results, I think that's a successful working.
Right.
Yeah.
My take. If you're getting results, even if they are negative results, and that happens on occasion, that is something that you're looking at, and there's no reason to worry about that. You know, put it down as a note in your journal if you keep one, and, you know, just keep doing it and seeing what more results. Eventually you'll just stop worrying about if it's just because it was meant to be or if it was your ritual, because it'll happen so much that you won't need to even think about that. It's second nature. It's like, oh, I did it. It happened. Cool.
Well, it's like I've been a solitary for 6 years, and then all of a sudden it happens, and I was like, wow, what's going on here? What happened?
I would say that
magic
the ritual
happened.
Probably helped it along.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Jackie, thank you. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you.
Okay, it looks like we are out of time. I want to
thank
you so much for being on the show. This has been really, really fascinating.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
This is great, and I encourage all the listeners to check out Von Faustus. blogspot.com. Probably tomorrow I will put up the archive of the show on my site, and I'll also make a note of your website so folks can go there. Two weeks from now, on October 2nd, we're going to be speaking with Rowan McElroy, who's a Hellenic polytheist and the devotee of Eros, and we'll be talking everything from gender and sexuality in contemporary polytheisms to the cultists of Eros to urban spirituality and more. So, and next week, stay tuned, because you're going to have the Pagan Music Hour with guest Brian Henke and Pamela McAfee, and you don't want to miss that. It's going to be a good Wednesday, folks. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in. And Sanyan, thank you. Jack, thank you very much. And I'm going to call it a night. And happy, happy equinox to those of you who celebrate. Good night, folks.
In Neolithic Shamanism by Raven Caldera and Galina Kraskova, 83 practical exercises build relationships with earth, sun, moon, plants, animals, water, fire, craft, air, and ancestors, while exploring the role of altered states in spirit work. Neolithic Shamanism is available at fine bookstores everywhere or at innertraditions.com.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio, or download us later on iTunes.
please check our schedule for accurate show times. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com and let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.